Blog Talk Radio.
I can't believe it. It's that time again. Broadcasting from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson. It's that day. It's time for Wild World. And from the remote jungles of Indianapolis, Indiana, Dr. Henry Day will be with us. And our guest, unbelievable. Man, we had to really bribe him. Member of the, I cannot believe this, Indiana sports writer and sportscaster, Hall of Fame, Mark Monteith, Pacer expert, recent book Reborn, The Pacers and the Return of Pro Basketball to Indianapolis. It's all here this week on Wild World, on Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the SRI Label Group. They're our underwriter. SRI Label Group, SRIRecords.com. Our good friend Shelley Leibowitz. So sit back, relax, not unless you're driving. And it's time for Wild World right here on Blog Talk Radio. Well, Dr. Henry Day, hello, how are you doing?
Good afternoon, Mr. Batson. How are things in the wild jungles of Clinton Falls?
Well, it's cool down. God bless them. It's gotten a little bit more. It's not so much like Indonesia now.
Yeah, that's true. But it's coming back by the end of the week. We'll be back up in the 90s.
Oh my gosh, we got that to look forward to. The only thing, the advantage. Yeah, we've had all this rain, so the grass is still growing like Cudzo, or what's that called, Cudzo, down in the southern part of our state. You know, the plant that basically took over Virginia and West Virginia.
Yeah, those like 6 inches a day.
Yeah. I forget the reason they planted all of that, but yeah. So, and now it's taken over, and they would give anything. In fact, I think they had someone that volunteered their goats to release goats in these areas where this Cudzo or Cudzo grows so proficiently.
Yeah, the
maybe
Cudzo,
the goats would like it. Yeah, but I don't think it works very well. I think that's an excellent idea. So what's that plant out in the southwestern part of the United States they hate so much? I can't think of it. Down Southern California, and it's a very tough weed. And gosh, I'll think of it after the broadcast. But someone sent camels down there, hopefully that they would eat it, but they weren't interested in it at all. So that experiment didn't work at all. This is Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Are you ready, Dr. Day?
Let's do it. So if we can get Mark on.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca. Oh, I love this song. In Indianapolis, Indiana. Newly renovated, now HD, this beautiful knotty pine paneling they put throughout the studio, and it looks fantastic, as well as an assortment of potted plants. The distinguished, honorable, and always prompt, Dr. Henry Day.
Why, thank you, Mr. Batson. If our listeners hear anything in the background today, the African Grey is in the studio with me.
Oh, good.
So you're liable to hear anything.
Well, you mentioned earlier that there was a couple profanities coming out of that bird, so we can only hope.
Yes, and I don't know where they came from.
Yeah.
All right, well, anyway. You know the big news this week. Coco the
gorilla. Oh, Coco. Yeah.
Coco has passed away at the age of 46.
I know. It's
she
so
knew
sad.
Over 1,000 words of sign language and quite an impressive creature. We were lucky to have her for so long.
And it had so many famous visitors. I think Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers, they spent some time on the bass guitar with Coco. I think Paul McCartney met him. or her, and Robin Williams.
Yep, and good old Mr. Fred Rogers.
Oh, I would have. I'll have to look up that tape. That'd be
yeah,
amazing.
Fred didn't seem as comfortable around Coco as some of the other guests, but
well, he actually knew what a gorilla is all about, how strong and powerful they
are. He was smart enough to know that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, this next story. This is all I know about. Dodson, Montana. Two people were injured after a driver swerved to avoid hitting a kangaroo.
Oh. Where was that?
Yeah. In Dodson, Montana.
That's what I thought you said.
Yeah, that's that, we'll have to find out a little more about this story, but at this time, that's all I know.
Oh,
all right.
Will become of the kangaroo?
Yeah, we don't know anything. That's all we know.
But we'll try to
let our listeners know a little more when we find out.
Okay.
Now, an elephant that once lived at Michael Jackson's Neverland Ranch escaped its enclosure at the Jacksonville Zoo in Jacksonville, Florida.
Mm.
Now, it took a little while, but staff used food and one glove to entice Ali back into his enclosure.
Wow. Wonder what that one food was.
Well, you know they work for peanuts.
Sorry, folks. I set him up too good.
Yeah.
You know, we were doing a commercial once. We were working on a commercial once with a white-tailed deer along a riverbank down in Vincennes, Indiana, and the director informed us that he needed the white-tailed deer who was not harnessed or had a lead on him or anything. He was just out wild. He needed him to stand in one particular spot so they could get this film footage. Now, most people think that's almost impossible. But when one of the crew members has a bag of Dorito chips and finds out that the deer absolutely loves them.
Well, I do, too.
And if you place a piece of shrubbery just in the right spot and put the Dorito chips in that shrubbery, you can put up the illusion that that deer's standing there. And they can get what they need. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Amazing. The secrets of wildlife photography.
Yeah. Well, you know, photography in general, Dr. Day, not to get off the subject, but as you know in advertising, what material do they use when they film ice cream?
Shaving cream.
No. Because it would melt. Real ice cream would actually melt, of course, under the light. So they use mashed potatoes.
Mm.
Okay, sorry once again.
Yeah.
I apologize again.
Well, you know, over the years, I've been in somewhat of the advertising business myself, and when I found out that when they photograph, let's say, a glass of ice with a Coke, the ice is actually glass or plastic so that it doesn't melt under the hot lights. You know, if they got to do several shoots, the ice would melt. So when I found out ice cubes were $250 a piece, I started making my own.
Fake ones or? Wow.
Fake ones, yeah.
All right, let's
get on with this wild world news. That was not a chupacabra that was found in Helena, Montana. Fish and Wildlife.
It wasn't a chupacabra.
It wasn't a chupacabra. I have confirmed that an unusual looking animal shot by a rancher in May was just a gray wolf.
Oh.
Now, apparently the wolf had the mange and was looking kind of rough, so they didn't know. They thought they had a chupacabra. And for our listeners that don't know what a chupacabra is, chupa means suck. Cabra means goat. So a chupacabra is a goat sucker.
I've heard that. I saw pictures of the wolf, though, and it didn't look – it did not – I'm not saying it was a chupacabra, a goat sucker, but it didn't look like a wolf to me. But why do I know? I've only been around wild animals forever, so –
Well, see, that's why we had our wildlife officials check it out.
Yeah.
All right.
I
well, don't mess with
Dee
Dee Phillips. Don't mess with Dee Dee Phillips of Hartwell, Georgia. Dee Dee Phillips, who is 46, was attacked by a bobcat. Now, she strangled the bobcat, which was rabid, after the animal attacked her.
Boy.
Yeah, can you imagine that?
No, it must have been about three quarters dead. It must have been about ready to pass on.
Well, yeah, it was rabid.
Because I've done battles with them, and I've never won. I've always been the loser.
Had the bobcat been healthy, that would have been a different story. All right, conservation officials are trying to find who decapitated an alligator that was found in the road in Palm Bay, Florida.
I have sympathy for the alligator, but there's only probably about a few million Billy Bobs down there that could be guilty of that crime.
Yeah, but you know how our conservation officers are. They're pretty good at their job.
They are, yeah. Good luck with that one, though.
Yeah, well, that kind of reminds me of what my grandfather used to say every time we take a little trip. He would say, "What's that in the road? A head?"
Was that a normal thing?
Yeah, that, and he would also say, "Get out the potato salad, Grandma. We're coming to a fork in the road."
He was pretty witty.
He was. All right. Let's go. Look what the cat dragged in.
I have no idea.
Kennewick, Washington. A family was shocked to find a young coyote curled up in the floor of the kitchen when they woke up one morning.
Yeah.
Now, the coyote was captured and released in an area near the sagebrush area near their residence. So I'm wondering if the cat just didn't open the dog door, the cat door, and let the coyote in, because he seemed pretty comfortable. He was asleep.
Well, I'm sure that's what happened.
Yeah. Got in, ate a bunch of food, decided to take a nap.
Now, I'm sorry if I wasn't listening closely enough, but how big was the coyote? I'm sorry if you were to said so.
It was a young coyote.
Oh, okay. I thought I kind of figured. Because you know what they say about the older coyotes? They drag those cats off. They don't go dining with them. They become, never mind.
Yeah, I tell you, the worst sound when I was stationed in the service in El Paso, the worst sound I have ever heard is a coyote catching a jackrabbit and running off with it.
Yeah.
That's the worst sound I've ever heard.
Yeah, a rabbit screaming is not good.
No. And those jackrabbits, they are quite large.
And loud.
All right. Every state should have a state reptile. Trenton, New Jersey, the bog turtle has been named the official state reptile.
Well, good. The bog turtle. I'll have to do a little research on that particular species of reptile.
Well, I'm sure it's probably like the musk turtles or the mud turtles. It smells like something you never want to smell again.
Well, you know, I have a mud turtle within 5 feet of me right now.
Well, pick him up and smell him and tell me what you think.
Oh, okay. Hang on. Never mind. I'll do it later.
All right, that's a good idea.
Broadcast.
All right, we got some good news from Great Falls, Montana. A grizzly bear has been spotted at Benton Lake National Wildlife Refuge for the first time since its creation in 1929. The grizzlies are moving back in.
Well, I think it's fantastic, but people there to live there won't like it. But that's
well,
fantastic.
They were there first. I'm sorry.
Well, I agree with that completely. You know, if you live in bear country, you have to
You live in bear country too, don't you?
I do. I know of two that live real close to me.
You can see them out your window, can't you?
Yeah, every once in a while. They're kind of, I think they might be sleeping right now. I can't see them.
Hey, that's what I would be doing. All right, what's 5 foot seven and weighs about 125 pounds?
Kazuma Sato, the race car driver.
Close enough. No, it's the new baby giraffe born at the Philadelphia Zoo in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Yep, new baby giraffe. His name is Bo, and he was born this past week.
Well, that's amazing news. We should send something.
We should.
I wonder what we could send them. What do you think it would cost to ship a bale of hay to that zoo?
Let's
with
see.
A nice appropriate card.
With a ribbon? A little
and
bow
a
on
ribbon.
It?
Yeah.
We'll check
that
out.
I figure UPS, you could get it there probably for under $200.
Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah, we'll do that.
Yeah.
All right. Leave
go ahead and ship
Hawaii.
It. I'll pay you back later.
All right. I'll do it right after the show. Leoa, Hawaii. The state has employed two rat-sniffing border terriers to help remove invasive rodents from a seabird sanctuary there.
Well, that's a good
idea. As we know, the rats will go in, destroy the nest, eat the eggs, disturb the nesting birds. A long time ago, they had a rat problem, and didn't they bring in snakes?
Yeah, that didn't work very well.
With the rat, and that didn't work well. And then they had to bring in something for the snakes. And then they had to bring in something for what they brought in for the snakes. Yeah, that was a mess. But
I'm going to bring into this deal?
Tell us.
I'm going to bring us in Mark Monteith. He just called in. And he's going to be on here.
Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon.
Hey, we're right in the middle of the Wild World News, but we would really appreciate your participation. Yeah, your precipitation, if you wish to do so.
Okay.
You remember Dr. Henry Day?
I do.
Good afternoon, Mark. It's been a while.
Good. Yes, how are you?
Doing good.
Well, it's great to have him on the show. Okay, Dr. Day.
Let's finish this up, and we'll get right to who's gotten older this week. All right, well, Jackson, Wyoming. Glad to hear it's working. So something they did a few years ago. More elk are returning through a bottleneck point along the path of the pronghorn, a protected wildlife migration corridor. They did this a few years ago to keep the animals from crossing the highways, and it seems to be working out pretty well.
Well, good.
And they're working on a few more spots to help with the migration of a lot of different animals, the elk and deer also. All right, it's time to play Who's Gotten Older.
Oh, cool. Is there cash prizes
ready,
this week?
Yes, there are cash prizes.
Oh, good.
All right, Mr. Sir Paul McCartney had a birthday on June 18th, which was last Monday. Now, how old do you think Paul turned?
Guests always get to go first.
Oh, I think it was 76, wasn't it?
I think he's
Mr.
right.
Mr. Batson?
I'll say 75.
Correct answer. Yeah, Mark's off to a good start.
Yeah.
76 is correct.
Well, he's a journalist.
Uh-huh.
He's active in the news media.
I'm a journalist, and I'm a big time Beatles fan too. So, I've read many books on the Beatles.
As are we. All right, singer Spanky McFarlane of Spanky and Our Gang.
Oh, my gosh. I'll say 66. I'm probably way off.
What? I would go for her around 70.
Well, 76 years old. Same as Paulie.
76 also, yeah.
Correct. All right, singer Ann Wilson of Heart. This one surprised me.
I'm afraid of that one.
I'll go 70.
59.
Oh, I'm afraid Mr. Batson was closer on this one. Ann turned 68 this week.
I'm 2 years off.
And she'll be mad when she hears that.
And you know, one anyone who has not watched that YouTube video of them doing Stairway to Heaven, oh, my gosh.
Oh, that right. White House thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good.
Yes, very good. So after the program,
okay.
Folks, go look it up if you haven't. All right, Doc, sorry.
Here's another one of our favorites, Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys.
Oh, he has to be about Paulie's age, I'd think.
Yeah, he should be. I would say maybe 74 or something like that.
Well, you both were right there. Brian turned 76 on Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
I saw them in 1971, I think it was, Clues Hall. Great concert when Dennis was still alive, and great show. All right, Lionel Richie, how do you think Lionel turned this past week?
110.
I'd go, I'd say like 68 for him.
Well, mark it right there, 69.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mark's
okay.
Kicking your butt today, Mr. Batson.
Yeah, well, he's a journalist. He's active in the media.
Okay, here's an oldie, Kris Kristofferson.
Oh, my God.
Hmm.
Oh, that's right.
Let's go with that magical
we don't have
number
to
76 again.
76. I'll say 70, but I know I'm wrong.
Wow, Kris turned 82 on Friday. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Well, if you hear him sing, it's not so unbelievable. But looking at him, I guess.
Well, that Kris was quite a smell. Okay, Batson, if you get this one wrong, you're out of the game. You can't play anymore. Singer
oh,
Todd
cool.
Rundgren.
Oh, my. 70.
I'll go 72.
Mr. Batson had to know this one. 70 was the correct answer.
I know.
He didn't want to get kicked off the show. All right, guitarist Jeff Beck.
Oh,
I've seen him in concert. 75.
I'll say, just like Price is Right, 72.
Well, Mark has won again, 74, right on the nose.
Smoked. I've just gotten smoked
right.
Today.
One more, and we will get on with Mark. Okay, Mick Fleetwood, Fleetwood Mac.
Oh. He's got to be Paulie age.
Mick.
Yeah, I'll say
actually
73.
71.
What's my?
Today. He's 71 today.
Wow.
Okay, let's do the facts of the day, and so we can get Mark on. All right. For our listeners in Culpeper, Virginia, you are still not allowed to wash your mule on the sidewalk. Now, in Nebraska, it's still illegal. Culpeper, Virginia, you can't wash your mule on the sidewalk. It's against the law.
That's what I had planned yesterday or tomorrow.
And it is still illegal to go whale fishing in Nebraska. So that's the Wild World News for Sunday, June 24th.
Well, once again, a great job done by Dr. Henry Day and his staff at the Wild World News headquarters in Indianapolis, Indiana, now HD. All brought to you by the SRI Label Group. SRI Label Group is our underwriter for Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. The SRI Label Group is for people that love all music, rock, jazz, blues, country. It is all their artists and their classic recordings. Best of ELO, Little Richard Live, the Chambers Brothers, Hall & Oates, a catalog of thousands of recordings available for download, or if you want to, just to listen to. Explore an amazing collection at the best musical site, the SRI Label Group. Check it out today, srirecords.com.
He had white horses and ladies by the square.
Well, today's guest, I think about every sports fan in North America would think he might have one of the best jobs, one of the best lives anyone could lead. Indiana sports writer and sportscaster, Hall of Fame, new book out, Reborn the Pacers and Return of Pro Basketball to Indianapolis. And, you know, like Donald Davidson is to the Indy 500, Mark Monteith is for our beloved, legendary Indiana Pacers, and we're so proud to have him along with us this afternoon in the Wild World. Afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon. Good to be with you.
Well, we really appreciate it. Man, I tell you what, we've had a chance to text a couple times, and, you know, you've been to all of these. A little bit later, I'm going to bring up some names of past players and get your perspective on them. But, you know, this Pacer franchise, I still think it's one of the greatest in the NBA.
Well, they haven't won a championship, but they have been one of the most stable in the NBA. And there's always been such great community support. When they've been a flickering flame, somebody has stepped in to save them. You know, Nancy Leonard with the telethon in 1977. The Simon Brothers in 83 bought them to keep them from moving out of town. And really at the very beginning, a group of local business leaders who put in their own money with no expectation of profiting from it, just to have a franchise and get it off the ground, that kind of thing. So, you know, there's been a great degree of community support. You know, the fan base is what fan bases are. When the team's doing well, they support it. When they're not very good, they don't. But that's just, you know, way it is everywhere, really. It's a small market, so you're not going to draw well when the team isn't good. But, you know, I would say since Simons bought it, it's been, you know, really stable and solid. It's always been, from day one, very good about giving back to the community. Even in 1967. They were doing things in the inner city or, you know, finding ways to give back to the community, and they're still doing that today.
And I'm the kind of Pacer fan. I don't have a chance to, well, I just can't attend games, but I love to listen to them. I think it's like the Indy 500. I love to listen to the Pacers on the radio. And we've been blessed with such great broadcasters over the years that have really done great things toward promoting this team. I mean, through the radio broadcast and keeping people aware of the Indiana Pacers, like, you know, Jerry Baker. I can still remember listening to those old ABA games and just love them. Just cling by the radio and listen to Jerry Baker give us the Pacers over WIBC, I believe it was.
I think he started out on WIRE, actually.
Really?
Which was, I forget the numbers. It might have been 1430, but I'll tell you a quick story. First game I ever went to, first Pacer game during that first season, 67-68, was against the Oakland Oaks. And Rick Barry was traveling with the team. He had to sit out when he jumped from the NBA to the ABA. He had to sit out one season, so he would do radio color for their broadcast. So a couple of my friends and I ran down and got Rick Barry's autograph before the game, and on the way back to our seats, we got Jerry Baker's autograph. I still have it today. And he was a big part of their early success. He made the games exciting for people like you and me listening on the radio. He was a colorful announcer, just had the it quality of a great play-by-play guy. You know, I could still remember, he gave nicknames, you know, the Big D, Mel Daniels, the Rajah, Fritchie, the Mighty Might, you know, this kind of thing. And he'd, you know, rip on the referees, and you just had to take his word for it on the radio. But was another story about Jerry Baker. When, you know, Mickey Mantle retired from baseball, he opened a chain of men's clothing stores, where he put his name to it anyway. And he was once in Indianapolis to appear at his new stores, men's clothing stores, somewhere, I think, on the east side. I think it might have been in the Meadows shopping area, but I'm not sure, somewhere on the east side. And Jerry Baker was there, and there were so many people crowding around Jerry Baker that Mickey Mantle was like, who is this guy? Who's this guy? You know, it's like he was more popular than Mickey Mantle was here in town. So Baker has always been a popular figure for the local population.
And you know something else he's legendary, his legend has been known for, and we touched on it earlier in the broadcast, is he introduced the Beatles at the Indiana State Fairgrounds.
Yes,
he
did.
Performed in the Coliseum.
Do you know what his radio name was?
Oh, I can't remember. Darn it! Because
yeah, I believe it was Jack Sunday.
Really?
I
wow.
believe I'm pretty sure that's right. Yeah, he had a radio name, and in the early years, yep.
Well, you know, too, Mark, we've talked about this. Just to stray away from sports for a moment, that we're so blessed to grow up in when we did the music that we had the chance, because you mentioned how much of a fan of the Beatles you were and all this great music we had a chance to grow up with. It was pretty fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Hello.
No question.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here. I cut out for a minute, but I'm here.
That's all right. I thought, well, that wasn't that moving. He has no response to that.
Yeah, I lost you there for a second. I don't know what happened.
Well, it's Blog Talk Radio. It's probably the Taliban. Our guest is Mark Monteith with the Indiana Pacers. I'm going to throw some names out here. I took some notes. First of all, I want to ask you, though I am a Pacers fan, I don't have a chance to attend the games, but I do watch them religiously on television and listen to them on the radio, so I forget what they call those kind of fans. But anyway, what about this new draft pick? Is there an holiday?
Well, it's a safe pick. You know, with the 23rd pick in the first round, you can't realistically expect a future superstar or all-star or maybe even starter. I think he could be, but we'll have to see. You know, but he's an outstanding shooter. He was over 40% from the three-point line all three of his seasons at UCLA. He's a heady player. He can get to the basket. No concerns whatsoever off the court. He comes from a great family. As you know, he's got two older brothers in the NBA. He's got an older sister who was on scholarship at UCLA, but she had a series of head injuries and had to quit. But intangibles are great. I think he's going to fit into the locker room extremely well. I think he's a good fit for the Pacers because they play it differently. They don't have a point guard who's your classy quarterbacking point guard like Mark Jackson was. They, their point guard essentially is Victor Oladipo. You know, he's got the ball in his hands far more than anyone else. And on the second unit, it's Lance Stephenson. So for the Pacers, you want a point guard who can play off the ball and hit shots. And that's why Darren Collison was effective last season, leading the league in three-point percentage. And I think Holiday is a similar kind of player. Not exceptionally athletic, not a great passer, but a smart player who shoots it really well and a really good defender. He's only 6'1", but he's got really long arms, like a 6'7" wingspan. And he likes defense. His dad was drilling the importance of defense into all his kids when they were coming up. So he'll guard. And I think he should be, at the very least, a good backup point guard.
Our guest, Mark Monteith, we're going to take a short break, three minutes. We want to remind everyone that our broadcast is brought to you by SRI Label Group, srirecords.com, and our good friend Shelley Leibowitz. And if you ever have the opportunity, and I suggest this, Mark, go to the website, srirecords.com. The catalog is unbelievable, and even if you don't want to download anything, you can listen to it for free. This is Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk. From the SRI Label Group, Al Jarreau doing that Al Green classic here on Blog Talk Radio. This is Larry Batson. Our guest, Mark Monteith. I call him the Donald Davidson of the Pacers. You know, for the people that may not know, Donald Davidson is the expert on the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and Mark Monteith, he is the historian for the Pacers as far as I'm concerned. New book, Reborn the Pacers and Return of Pro Basketball to Indianapolis, which I'm sure, Mark, is available everywhere.
It is. Bookstores throughout the state of Indiana, places like Meijer. It's at my brother's store, Georgetown Market. It is on Amazon.com. So pretty much everywhere, yeah. It is not hard to find.
You know, we've done a couple children's books and done book signings at schools. You'd have to agree. Isn't it one of the coolest things when you sign something you've worked so hard on and give it to someone, they pick it up with such love and walk away with it? I'm telling you, isn't that just the case?
Yeah, it's a nice little ego trip, and it is a nice reward for all the labor and really, conversing with the fans while you're doing the signings is always a lot of fun. People come in, you know, they're like yourself. They went to games back in the day and have a lot of memories of going to games at the Coliseum. So it's always fun to talk with people. And, you know, the feedback you get on the book is also certainly enjoyable.
And you probably get from the feedback, you almost get enough material to do a new book.
Well, you know what? I have met some people who had certain memories that make me think, you know, I wish I had talked to you before I finished the book. You know, I could have put that in there.
Yeah.
So, you know, people in Indianapolis who grew up around here have so many memories of going to games at the Coliseum and, you know, the rowdy atmosphere that was there and just the crazy things that could not happen today at a game. And so, yeah, that's part of the scene. You know, there, some of those memories are usable for book material.
Sure. I remember the Pacers. I mean, they would smoke cigarettes at halftime, and they had a beer cooler in the locker room. I mean, that was cowboy basketball.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a few of the players, George McGinnis, I believe Darnell Hillman, Slick, Roger Brown, would smoke at halftime of games. And, you know, the fans could smoke, so there would always be a cloud of smoke hovering over the court. And that wasn't just the Coliseum. That was, you know, Butler or all kinds of places. You know, people could smoke cigarettes at the games. And you know, contributed to the atmosphere and the smell and everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to throw some names at you.
Okay.
Some past Pacers and maybe a story or your interpretation. Gus Johnson.
Gus Johnson, you know, he was on the 73 championship team. He was an NBA veteran who was literally on his last legs as a player. You know, he had horrible knees. I once asked David Craig, the Pacers trainer for 35 years, you know, of all the players you've worked with, who played with the most pain? And he said, Gus Johnson. You know, he really couldn't run, but he was so skilled. And he was like an assistant coach. You know, in fact, there was a playoff game in 73 in the final series against Kentucky where Slick got kicked out, and Gus Johnson coached the team the rest of the game. His teammates had great respect for him. You know, by 73, the Pacers had won titles and you know, had been playing for a while. But Gus Johnson rolled in with even more experience and having been an NBA All-Star, and they looked up to him. And he was a real contributor to that 73 championship team. And, you know, he passed away of a brain tumor, I think at some point in the 80s or early 90s, maybe it was. And that's a shame. But he was a guy that, you know, Slick knew and I think had coached in the NBA. And so Slick was well aware of him, and they had an opening, and they brought Gus in. And I know that's the only ring Gus ever got, that 73 championship.
Wow. Jerry Harkness.
Well, I've been spending a lot of time with Jerry. He is coming out with his own biography. In fact, just last night I emailed him with, you know, my edits to it and everything. He's got a great story to tell. I devoted an entire chapter to Jerry in my book. He, just growing up in Harlem the way he did, he literally had his life turned into a different direction from an offhand comment Jackie Robinson gave to him. Jerry did not go out for his high school basketball team until his senior year. And the summer before senior year, he's at the YMCA in Harlem shooting around on his own, Jackie Robinson comes through and throws out a little compliment like, hey, you're not too bad or something like that. And that got him so excited, he went out for the team and made the team, became All-City, got a scholarship to Loyola, became the captain of a national championship team. Jerry was all over the news this past Final Four when Loyola made it because of the historical value of the 1963 championship team. And he's just a great guy. He was the first black sportscaster in the state of Indiana, worked for United Way for most of his career, and just a great guy, one of the all-time nicest guys you would ever meet.
And, of course, that legendary shot that he made, how many feet was that? That won that game?
88
I can't even remember.
Yeah, down in Dallas the first season, like November of 67, the Pacers had a game in Dallas, and he hit an 88-footer at the buzzer that banked in from the other end of the court, a three-pointer that won the game. And, you know, not many people saw it. The game was not televised. It was initially announced as a 92-footer, but then they realized the basket is 4 feet inbounds and not on the end line. So you can't measure from the end line. So it's now regarded as an 88-foot shot. His email address incorporates the number 88. That ball was sent to the Naismith Hall of Fame for a while, and then was sent back to him eventually. He later sold it, which he regrets now, but he got a pretty good chunk of change for it. And so, yeah, that's quite a claim to fame. It was the longest shot in the history of pro basketball until Baron Davis hit one that was measured at 89 feet at the end of the third quarter of a game in the 90s sometime.
Wow. That's I can remember, believe it or not, cartoon that Ripley's did on that shot. So.
Yes. Oh yeah, yeah. Good call. He was featured in a Ripley's Believe It or Not cartoon, you know, a month or two after he hit that shot.
Okay, now I have to confess, I heard a little bit about this player, so I love the story so much, but he was a little wacky, Reggie Harding.
Yeah, I also devoted a chapter to him in my book, about 50 pages worth of material. He'd be in the Hall of Fame today if he wasn't such a knucklehead. You know, it's really a tragic story. He grew up in the streets of Detroit. Mother gave him up for adoption. He's, you know, on the streets. Because he was so tall, you know, he hung out with older kids, and they were bad influences. He was a parade All-American high school player. He was drafted by the Pistons right out of high school. He had to go to a prep school for 1 year and then sit out a year. But he was a great talent. He, we could talk forever just on Reggie. You know, he took a gun with him on a road trip to New Orleans. We took a gun with him on a lot of road trips, but the most common story is that they went to New Orleans for a game, and he was rooming with Jimmy Rail. And he pulled the gun on Rail, just kind of clowning around. And, you know, Rail asked for the gun and took the bullet shot, and Harding had other shells he put in there. And Rail just left the room and sat in the lobby all night long. But, you know, and then on the way home, he took the gun out and was clowning around with it on the airplane. And the most likely story is that they got it away from him and went on home. Some players remember them putting the plane down. I think that they just got it away from them and flew on home.
Yeah.
So, but despite all that, everyone who knew him would tell you he was a nice guy. I got his autograph as a kid at the airport, and I've got a copy of that autograph in the book. And, you know, he's just a guy that, you know, if he'd gotten better influences at a young age, he could have turned out all right, you know, but everybody who knew him liked him, but he just kept messing up and, you know, petty crimes, this kind of thing. He actually was getting his life turned around at the end, and then he wound up getting shot and killed in like 1973 or 4, I believe.
Wow.
Played about 20-some games for the Pacers that first year, and they were rolling. I mean, he outplayed Mel Daniels in head-to-head matchups, and but then he went to Detroit. They had like a week off between their last game in the playoffs and between their last game and second to last game. He goes back to Detroit and didn't get back in time for practice and gets suspended for the playoffs, and that was it.
Wow. One of my favorite players from the very beginning, and I always enjoyed, as I mentioned earlier, listening to Jerry Baker call the games, but one of the most amazing basketball players that did not get enough recognition. I think you know who I'm talking about, Roger Brown.
Yeah. Yeah. He, it's funny, this last Tuesday I went over to Dayton. You know, I wanted to do a follow-up book on the championship years of the Pacers, and I, even though I write a lot about Roger Brown in my book, I want to get into a story even more in a follow-up. And I went over to Dayton last Tuesday and met with four different people, including his first wife, to get his story. You know, one of the all-time great high school players, went to Dayton, was on the freshman team, and then at the end of that season gets implicated for cavorting with gamblers. There's a guy named Jack Molinas who was just a bad guy who was fixing games and getting players to shave points and so forth. And Roger knew him. You know, Molinas would do favors for Roger, give him $20 here, let him borrow his car there, you know, buy him a sandwich here, that type of thing. But Roger was never involved in the fixing games. He's a high school kid. You know, how's he going to go out and fix games? Nobody's
right.
betting on high school games. But the point, Molinas was trying to, you know, get Roger into his fold so that when he got into college, he could communicate with other players and either participate in shaving points or getting other players to take money to shave points, that kind of thing. So Roger's name came up in the investigation. He was banned from the NCAA and NBA for life. And the ABA Whoa. Gave him a second chance. You know, he was working the night shift at a GM factory in Dayton after he was suspended. And was married to a woman, Carolyn, a lovely lady who's a nurse. And, you know, the ABA gave him another chance. And he was playing pickup games in the offseason with Oscar Robertson and various guys down in Cincinnati. So when the Pacers went calling on Oscar to be player coach, he directed them toward Roger Brown. And, you know, one of the great assists the Pacers ever received. And Roger came in and was one of the all-time great talents of the ABA. Now, to be honest, Roger, he coasted. You know, he would take games off. He'd do whatever he could to save his energy. And but he was their first great clutch player. And he was just an uncommonly graceful player. I heard a great description of him from Tom Thacker, a former Pacer, who said Roger played at his own speed. And, you know, he wasn't a guy who was out there diving on the floor for loose balls and just dunking on people or whatever. But he was so graceful and clever and deceptively quick, he would always get to the basket and get a shot. And really a unique style of player. People who didn't see him play should go on YouTube and look for some of the clips and you can get a feel for what kind of player he was.
Well, I remember, and I'm going to go YouTube anyway and look, because it was just, oh my gosh. He understood that red, white, and blue basketball. I mean,
you
it wasn't.
Roger had such bad eyesight that he said that he couldn't, he just saw an orange blur up there. He didn't really see the rim, and that's what he shot at.
Really?
After he was with the Pacers for like, I think it was in the second season with the Pacers, they finally got him fitted for contact lenses.
Oh, man, I bet. Oh, gosh. Gentlemen, I had a chance to meet, and I saw him play in high school several times, and I still think one of the most amazing basketball players, George McGinnis.
Yeah, one of the all-time great high school players, just a physical specimen. You know, of course, you know, led Washington to the state championship in an undefeated season in 1969. Mr. Basketball scored 50 points in the Indiana-Kentucky All-Star Series down in Louisville in the second game of that series. And one varsity season at IU, and he becomes a Pacer. And, you know, his father had been killed in a construction accident after his senior year in high school. So George was eager to get a job and help his, you know, support his mother. His mother had to work two jobs. She didn't get much of an insurance settlement. So, you know, George was highly motivated to get out and play pro ball as quickly as he could. And the Pacers afforded that opportunity. And he was, you know, you'd have to say he was the greatest individual talent the Pacers ever had. You know, you could say Reggie Miller had a better career and, you know, measure it different ways. But as far as who was the best player at the peak of his career, to me, it would be George McGinnis. You know, he averaged, you know, 30 points, 15 rebounds a game in the season. He shared MVP honors with Julius Erving. You know, just a complete player. He would admit, you know, way too many turnovers, but a physical specimen whose career was too short. You know, he really didn't take care of himself. Like we mentioned earlier, he smoked. He never worked out because he was so advanced physically. It never seemed like he had to. And so he was done about 31, 32 years old, but also just a really nice person. And I was flattered George let me help him with his Hall of Fame induction speech last September, and went over to his house a couple of times and worked on that. And it was obviously a belated opportunity. And by the way, while we're mentioning that Hall of Fame, the person who deserves the most credit for George McGinnis finally getting into the Hall of Fame would be Rick Barry, because George got in via the Veterans Committee. They had that ABA committee to bring in ABA players. They got rid of that. And people thought that was the end of George's chance to get into the Hall of Fame, but he got in via the Veterans Committee, mostly thanks to Rick Barry, who had played against him and backed him, you know, to the other committee members, and got it done.
Wow.
I went to high school with George and saw most of those games in 1969. Him, Louis Day, Steve Downing. What an incredible player.
Yeah, Wayne Pack and Jim Arnold, right? And Wayne Pack's a good story. You know, Wayne Pack got cut 3 years in a row and then made the team his senior year when Bill Green came in and was a great point guard for that team. So, yeah, that is easily one of the all-time greatest high school teams in the state of Indiana.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, I saw them play my alma mater, Northwest High School. They were Northwest Space Pioneers. And we actually gave them a game. I mean, it was close up until the end. I believe it was a 69 year. So.
Yeah, I remember a game where we played Attics. And when all the players went to leave, the buses were turned over.
Well, the Washington story is great because that was, they won it in 65 when Billy Keller led them, and then again in 69. And that was really a kind of a melting pot school on the west side there. Good mix of black and white kids. And,
Yeah. Do you have a favorite Pacer of all these years, Mark?
No, I really don't. You know, I've covered so many of them and met so many of the players I didn't cover, and you know, it would be hard to think of one who wasn't really a good guy. Some of them had their struggles in their life outside of basketball, but nobody, you know, wound up in jail or in big trouble, or really, I don't know of any who were just down and out. You know, they might have gone through a period where they, you know, needed assistance of some kind, but nobody is just on skid row. So it would be hard for me to name a favorite. I guess the guys I know Jerry Harkness well. I know Billy Keller well. I've played golf with him a few times. George McGinnis I've gotten to know well. You know, the guys I cover now, I don't try to get close to, you know, because I'm covering them now. So but the retired guys, certainly you get to know on a different level. You know, Mel Daniel, if I had to pick one, I might say Mel. Mel was just a great guy who did not have a big ego. You know, a two-time league MVP. To me, he was the heart and soul of those Pacer championship teams. He didn't have a playoff moment like Roger Brown did. You know, he didn't have a 50-point game in the playoffs or a singular moment you go to. But two-time league MVP, who was the guy who would get on his teammates if they weren't playing hard enough. But a really humble guy and a really sophisticated guy. You know, he loved poetry. He read poetry. He wrote a lot of poems. I was so impressed. You know, I was flattered to speak at his funeral service at the field house. And the thing that really jumped out to me was how many people came from all over the country to be there, and not just former teammates. Like Billy Keller came up from Florida, and Billy Knight came from Atlanta. Dale Davis came from Atlanta. But front office workers, people working in cubicles in that front office in the marketing department or ticket sales department, they flew in from all over the place to pay respects to Mel, because he was the kind of guy who could relate to everybody in a front office situation and really got close to some people there. So he was a regular guy who accomplished a lot. It was a great story because he didn't even pick up a basketball till his sophomore year in high school. And, you know, became a great player. So he was a special guy A lot of tears were shed when he passed away.
I'll bet. I'll bet. What an amazing guest, Dr. Day.
We knew it was going to be a good show when you told me Mark was going to be on. We knew that.
Yeah. He's also got a great broadcasting voice. I always love to hear him before the games on the radio, so it's very humbling to have him on our program. Very, very, very nice, Mark.
Well, I appreciate it. I've always fun to talk Pacers, and I'm always flattered to be asked to do it. And anytime you need a guest, I'm happy to do it.
Well, let's plug the book, Reborn the Pacers and Return of Pro Basketball to Indianapolis. Any basketball fan, I don't care where you live in the country or around the world, please get this book. It's amazing. Our guest, Mark Monteith. Have a great week, everybody. Closing it out from the SRI Label Group, Cool and the Gang, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, Mark.
Hey, thanks, guys.